If you capture the younger generation, if you reach them, you're likely to keep them.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaters, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest in this episode is Sam Rayner, and we'll be talking about the looming pastoral retirement crunch. This is a conversation that started because I read Sam's article, The Coming Massive Wave of Retiring Pastors and Church Staff, since so much of what he wrote about it matches what I'm seeing as I travel and speak with pastors everywhere. In this conversation, he and I talk about several things, including the parameters of this crisis and where it came from, the rise of bivocational and co-vocational ministry, opportunities for interim pastoral ministry, and the importance of planning your pastoral succession. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with a few helpful follow-up thoughts, including we have a plan here at Helping Small Churches Thrive to help you face the upcoming wave of pastoral departures. We're doing a webinar series coming up soon on how to have a healthy pastoral succession in your church. You'll hear more about that at the midpoint break and when I come back after our conversation. Well, Sam Rayner, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here today.
Good to be with you, Carl. Thanks for having me on the show.
I've got you here because you wrote a really interesting article. Well, you write a lot and you do a lot of interesting things, but one that I thought would be of particularly interest to our listeners. You wrote an article entitled The Coming Massive Wave of Retiring Pastors and Church Staff, which means you're seeing what I'm seeing, right? I mean, everybody I talked to, I was on with Dale Sellers' podcast recently, and he said, what are you seeing about this? And everybody's seeing the same thing. There's a group of pastors right now that are going to be retiring, that are currently beginning to retire and will be retiring in the next, decade or so. And that always happens. You know, nobody stays forever. But what's happening now that makes this particularly challenging and something we need to pay a little more attention to?
You know, the demographic realities of the church are the demographic realities of the nation. The church just happens to be a generation older than the nation. Mm-hmm. So you look at your median age in the 1970s in the nation, and it was late 20s, mid to late 20s. Now we have a median age in the nation of about 40. Pastors were in the sweet spot of their career in the 70s and 80s. You're talking a typical pastor being 30 to 35 years old during that time frame. So if you just did the stats, you know, your quote unquote typical pastor would be in that range, somewhere in the 30s. Now, the average age of a congregant is 60, and the average age of a pastor, the median age of a pastor, is 60. There's nothing wrong with age. Our nation is getting older, right? So there's a demographic reality to this, that the nation as a whole is just getting older. That's a whole nother discussion that has all sort of economic ramifications, more so than we would like to realize. But the problem with the church is, hey, if you're 60 and doing well, great. You've got a lot of experience. You've been in a long time. You can't help your age. You know, I say that all the time to my own people. You had no say the year you were born. You had no say on the day you were born. So let's all just get over this whole age thing. Whether young or old, who cares? You can't control that. So what does it matter? Now, that's on the individual level. But if you look at it from the macro perspective, you pull way back and go, let's just look at the trends. Well, this is where the trends get disturbing. There's nothing wrong with being 60 years old, 65 years old, or whatever, and being a pastor. Nothing wrong with that at all. The problem is that, you know, the typical age of a pastor is that age, which means they're all going to retire at once over the course of like 10 years, which is we're in that now. And there's not a pipeline of younger people behind them. So the issue here is that what was a 30-something-year-old pastor has become a 60-something-year-old pastor. There's no sort of pipeline in the works to bring in people who are younger to take these positions. Just like the nation has all sorts of economic realities with the aging of the nation, there are ecclesiological realities with the aging of the pastorate.
Yeah. I have seen this in real time happen in my life. I came into pastoral ministry in the early 1980s. And at the time, for every open church, there could be 25, 30 people who were applying for that position. So fighting for a church position was the real thing. Today, it's the opposite of that. And What happened to the pipeline of pastors coming up? Why were there so many when I began in ministry and so few now? What happened to the pipeline?
I think that the profession of pastor became less appealing to younger people, the younger generations. I think churches did not do a good job of training up from within. And I think denominations got a little too comfortable with the baby boomer generation, which, by the way, is a great generation. I don't know if you're Gen X or baby boomer.
I'm a late boomer. Yep.
So it's called the pig and the python, right? When you read about the baby boomer generation, this, if you look at an age pyramid chart to talk about statistics, that baby boomer generation kind of ballooned up. Well, when that was happening and the baby boomers were in their prime, that was the nation's largest generation. I mean, you could do whatever you wanted because
Yeah.
that generation was so big and there was enough people to pull from. So I think that we got a little comfortable with the baby boomer generation just being of size. And we forgot that, hey, the generations that have followed, particularly Gen X, is much smaller. Millennials are about the same size as the baby boomers, if not a little bigger now. But that's not due to birth rates, but immigration. So what we've got is this smaller pipeline because of demographic realities. And we just didn't do the work to train people up. We didn't make ministry something that people desired or aspired to.
I remember when I started at the church that I'm currently serving for 32 years now, 25 as the lead pastor, and then the past 8 years serving in various capacities in the congregation. When I first came in to a church in crisis in the early 1990s, I sat down with my youth pastor at the time, who is now my pastor, and I said, okay, there's two different approaches we can take. I came to a church that was almost just a handful of seniors, very discouraged, had almost closed the doors. Remember, this is the early 90s, so I'm using early 90s illustrations at the time. I say we can either take the Rolling Stone approach or we can take the MTV approach. The Rolling Stone approach is the pig and the python. They stayed with the same people as they aged, and it became an older magazine. MTV started out, I don't know if you remember back in the day, but they had these five, they called them VJs at the time, right?
Oh, I remember. I'm not that young, Carl.
No, you remember? But you look so young, so it's
Maybe.
deceitful.
I don't know.
Yeah, so they had these, and they became superstars overnight. And at the beginning, MTV said, we're firing all of them when their contracts are done. We're not renewing their contracts. We're going to restart it, refresh. And everybody said, well, it's not going to happen. You can't get rid of these people. They're superstars. Sure enough, what happened? Their contracts were done. They let them go and they started fresh again. MTV was constantly refreshing. Like they'd cancel a show at its peak in order to do the new thing. Now, the effect of MTV on the world obviously is not a positive, so we're not going to follow MTV in a whole lot of what they did. But I said, we've got two approaches we can take as a church. We can do the Rolling Stone thing, which is we're going to reach out to a demographic and we're going to move with them as they age, or we're going to constantly refresh on a regular basis to bring in a new pipeline of people as they come through. We chose the MTV approach. And when we did it, I didn't know that choosing that approach in church was so rare. So now our congregation, we've been really blessed. We have a young congregation. It stays young. It continues to bring in new people. We've got a pipeline of leaders. But as I travel, as I've done now for the last 12 to 14 years in helping small churches around the country and around the world, I discover that what we chose to do so many years ago, that I believe, God made me smarter than I would have been on my own to do it that way. That is so rare. We have forgotten about the pipeline of people behind us. And we've now got this gap. You say in your article, churches want 32 to 52-year-olds as their lead pastors, but we can't find them anymore.
No, they're not out there. They're really not. There are some. I mean, I'm 45, so we do exist. I mean, we are around.
That's why you look so young to me, because it's so rare. There we go.
Yeah, no, I'm well into middle age. So, I look at myself and I'm going, man, there's no one behind me. I'm an older millennial. I'm among the oldest of the millennials. So not only is it a demographic reality that's occurring, there is a sociological problem here as well. And the sociological problem, and I say problem, it's not what I'm about to say isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it has become an issue. Let me put it that way. As the baby boomers came of age, Most of them moved out of their smaller mainline churches and into larger evangelical churches. So you can
Okay.
chart this
Yeah.
out. You can look at the decline of the mainline groups, and you can see just the exodus of baby boomers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s as they're coming of age. So they then go into these churches that would become, as we know today, mega churches. And what we have is more people going to the larger churches. So why is the pipeline drying up? There's a sociological reality of, well, we only need one pastor for 10,000 people because
Okay.
we put it all over the screens. Well, that only works to a point, right? I mean, the median church size in the 90s was like 150, 200, depending on what, denomination you're. So 150 to 200, now it's 65. There are no more people to, we have as many churches as we ever have. They just tend to be smaller churches than they once were. The median church size has declined. And most mega church growth, let's just be real, is transfer growth. Now there's plenty of good examples. There's plenty of ones that actually did things right. But most of it's transfer growth, and it was a baby boomer phenomenon. I'm going to leave my mainline church and I'm going to go into two tribes, non-denom or Southern Baptist. Well, that has peaked, that has waned. The number of mega churches that exist today is half what it was, at the peak in like 2010, 2012. Now, some of these churches keep getting bigger, of course, but when you have an extremely large church where there is a video venue setting, you don't need a pipeline. You just need one person that's talented. So there is a bit of that dynamic going on as well. And I'm talking as if it's more negative than positive, and maybe that's true, but there's plenty of positives to what some of these churches have done as well. I don't mean to imply that they're all negative, but that transfer growth phenomenon is done. It stopped. If the median church size is 65 people, those are the people that are just going to stay. They're 70 and 80 years old now. They're not going anywhere. So now we need something different. Now we need something new. And I think what the millennials will bring in is what I've written about the neighborhood church. But there's the problem with that is who's going to shepherd them? Who is going to pastor them? This pastor shortage is a true crisis. It really is.
What you're describing reminds me of an article, and it may have been an article that your dad, Tom Rayner, wrote about churches are getting smaller, but more people are attending bigger churches. And so when the typical church is 65, but the typical Christian is attending a church, I think of 500 or 600 is kind of where, and I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head, but I think I'm fairly close to that.
You are. I'd have to look up the
Yeah, okay.
data. That's research that comes from some other researchers. But yes, you're close. I'd have to look up the data, but you're close.
Yeah. So with that idea, if the typical church goer is attending a church of 500, that's a very different culture, a very different type of leadership. So many things are different in a church of 500 or 600 as compared to a typical church of 50 or 60. And so most Christians are in this bigger church, but the need is in the smaller church, and the culture difference is so vast. I don't know how we're going to replace the pastor needed in the small church when people don't even have, when a smaller and smaller percentage of people even have the small church experience in their background to know what the culture is like. How do I lead it? How do people relate to each other? I can't just put in a check request form because I've got to go raise the money first.
So let's fast forward 20 years. All right. I'm retiring now. I'm 65 years old.
Got it.
There's a few options that are in front of us. One option is that these smaller churches, and by smaller, I mean typical churches. You say 50 people, that's a small church. That's actually kind of a typical church. A small church would be like 20, 25 people. But so let's understand what normal is and what is not normal. So fast forward 20 years. Some of these churches are going to figure out a co-vocational, bivocational model. And they're going to get it. They're going to understand that that's the future. And they're going to train up from within. They're going to do things to get somebody equipped locally to lead that church. And then what's going to happen with some of these larger churches? Not all. Well, most actually. If you look at research, the biggest churches remain the biggest for about 20 years. There's about a 20 to 25 year life cycle with being the biggest of the big. Just go back 50 years. Look at the list of the largest churches. They exist. That was the highlight of the church growth there. Some of those churches don't even exist anymore. Go back and look at the list in the year 2000. Who is the biggest of the big? Some of those churches do not even exist anymore. They have literally folded. The list changes every 25 years or so. So what's going to happen is we're going to have these very large campuses or multi-site systems that can no longer support themselves. So what may happen in 20 years is, wow, I'm a neighborhood church pastor. We've grown from 100 now to 175, 200. We're busting at the seams. The mega church has folded. Let's go buy their campus. So what's going to happen is a reversion of what is happening now with larger churches taking on some of these sites. Now, that's just one option. That's one thing that could happen. You know, I think that's the more likely option, because roughly 90% of the cost of a building occurs after you build it. So if there are churches that have built $100 million campuses plus, some that are that big. Well, the upkeep of that over time is $1 billion. And the baby boomers are not going to live. And this baby boomers who are supporting this right now. They're not going to live long enough to continue to support that. So we will reach a crisis, not only of the aging of the pastorate, but also of deferred maintenance. So in about 20 years, you're going to see a convergence of several factors here. You're going to see these giant churches that once had 10,000 that now have 1,500 or 2,000, and they can't pay the bills. And we're already seeing the beginnings of this. I have seen churches of 800 and 900 and 1,000 merge with larger, big mega churches, simply because that 800 or 900 people cannot support the campus because it's just that big. Well, that's only going to get exacerbated over time. So what could potentially be the future is the neighborhood church. Now, we're a long shot from like this whole movement of neighborhood churches. We need them to get healthier. But the financial sustainability of a church of 75 people on like 3 acres is far better than this gigantic campus or even a series of very large campuses in a multi-site system. And I'm not opposed to multi-site, hear me out. I'm not opposed to large single-site churches either. I think there's a place for them. But the reality is if that's what we're relying on, that is a baby boomer reality, and that's going to run its course. Yeah. Go into most of your larger churches, and what you will find, and if you do a true demographic study of them, is that the bulk of the people there are of the baby boomer generation. And that eventually will come to an end. So I do believe that the answer is co-vocational, bivocational ministry, neighborhood churches, and this idea of we're local, we focus on the neighborhood right around us, the community right around us. We're a church of 80 people. We want to get to 200. And then we'll plant another church once we fill up our campus.
Yeah. I love that, the forward thinking that you're doing there. And one of the things I really appreciate about your approach to this is, for a lot of our listeners, you may not recognize these terms, but there are lagging indicators and leading indicators. So a lagging indicator is something that tells you where your church is, but it's done and you can't really do anything. So last week's attendance is a lagging indicator. We had this many people. You're talking about leading indicators, where things are going. The current demographics tell us that certain things are inevitable. We know within certain parameters what size our nation is going to be over the next 20 years. And we know within certain parameters what the ethnic mix is likely to be, what the socioeconomic mix is likely to be, because certain indicators are going to lead us to certain places. We know there's not going to be a boom outside of God stepping in with the miraculous, which I'm always open to him doing, make it so, Lord Jesus. But all the leading indicators are telling us we are not going to have a boom in pastors over the next 20 years. We're going to have a challenge in finding them. And so we do need to redefine, I think, in a lot of ways, what the pastor looks like and what the church looks like. So you mentioned a couple things. Let's jump on them, because these are things we've had a lot of conversations about on this podcast. Number one you mentioned was the bivo or co-vocational pastor, or at bare minimum, the pastor who has a side hustle to be able to give them a little more financial and freedom and margin, and to be able to be a less of a financial burden upon the church, so that more ministry that is raised by the church can go directly into hands-on ministry rather than simply supporting the salary of the pastor. This also has the advantage of matching where current generations are going. It's not just a church reality that people have a side hustle. So a small church is not going, well, we're less than if we need a pastor to have a side hustle. We're actually fairly typical. Our entire congregation, as young as it is now, every single staff member has a side hustle, which means we have a larger and younger staff than most churches have. So talk to us about the benefit of the bivocational, the co-vocational, and the side hustle culture that's happening among pastors.
Okay, let's jump back into demographics. The mobility rates in the, I will answer your question, but I want to preface it with something. Mobility rates in the United States are at all-time lows. people think that we used to move less than like the 1950s. We moved way more from one town to another, one city to another, way, way, way more in the 1950s and the 1960s. You know, it used to be one out of three would move, one out of four would move. Now mobility rates are like 7-8%. Like
That much of a
extra
drop.
oh, extraordinarily low. And by the way, most of them are baby boomers who are retiring and going to a different place because they're the ones that have the money to do it. So if you are a millennial, if you are a Gen Zer, you are staying put. You don't move. Millennials don't move because we're locked in with either a low rate or a house that we couldn't afford a future house if we wanted to because they're too expensive. So if you capture the younger generation, if you reach them, you're likely to keep them, is the point here. And a lot of people miss that the mobility rates of particularly the youngest people are at some of the lowest points we've ever been since we've been tracking them in the nation. So the opportunity for bivocational and covocational is huge. By the way, the difference between bivocational and covocational is bivocational is if the church really just can't afford a full-time pastor but would like one. Covocational means you've made a strategic choice to be in the marketplace. It's like some nuance there. You can use those terms interchangeably. You know, it doesn't bother me, but that's kind of the technical difference there. So because of this, if churches understand this, let's reach the next generation, you're likely to keep them one. And from that will flow those who could potentially lead the church. Add to that the idea that we used to be one income homes and now we're two income homes. So even if you want to move, you can't. Like, oh, I got a new job offer somewhere, but my wife or my husband has to move now and they have to find another job and we can't afford that. So you've got the mobility rates at all-time lows, real estate at all-time highs, interest rates that are not favorable, at least right now. That will probably change in the future. But home prices high, mobility rates low, and the idea of two income homes, which is what most homes are now, go after these families. And within them, as you reach young families over the next 5 or 10 years, you will find future church leaders and future pastors. And that's what really needs to happen. And I think that's what a lot of people are missing when it comes to bivocational and co-vocational. I'm co-vocational. I've made a choice to have a business on the side. And I told my church when I got here that I will always do that because, well, I've got lots of reasons. But one reason is less of a financial burden on my church. The church does not feel that pressure to pay me. In fact, I probably revealed too much on your show, but breaking news, Carl. Breaking news. My personnel committee felt so badly about how low I was on my pay that this year they are actually bumping me up to the median salary. So I'm normal now. I'm normal after 10 years of being at my, but that was by design. That was by design. I've been at the church 10 years. They feel like, Sam, it's time. I'm like, okay, it's fine. But they don't have to do that. And they wouldn't have to do that because I do have another vocation. I'm co-vocational. I think that's the future. It's hard. You may say, man, that's not ideal. Well, of course, it's not ideal. It's not ideal that we've aged the pastorate. So it's like we can talk ideals all we want, but it doesn't matter. There is the reality in front of us that this is going to happen. You also mentioned the ethnic mix, which is missed as well. For the first time since 1790, the white population declined at the last census, and it was by tens of millions. So the idea that you're going to be a growing suburban white church, like what was really popular in the 80s and 90s, just that's a demographic reality. Like, say what you will about that. That happened because that's who was there. That's changing. Birth rates are at 1.6 current. Replacement rate is 2.1, used to be like four. So we're not having babies. So the answer to the economic crisis in the nation is actually more immigration, not less, if we really want to solve this problem. I know there's a huge debate about what kind of immigration we need and how they get here. I'm fine to have that debate. But the demographic reality is that we will get more diverse as a nation, not less. And that is what's going to bring the age down. And that's the only way that it's going to happen. So if you are counting on like this white suburban middle class that you were used to from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, it doesn't exist anymore the way that it did.
Before we continue, here are a couple of quick items of interest for you. First, if you're new to this podcast, it's a product of helping small churches thrive at carlvaders.com. we provide encouragement and resources for pastors of the 90% of churches that aren't big through workshops, books, articles, this podcast, and more. You can subscribe to my free weekly newsletter and get all the latest resources and news at carlvaders.com/subscribe. Second, pastoral succession is something every church knows it will face, but that we do almost no preparation for. Because of that, we tend not to do it very well. To step into this gap in our pastoral training, we've created a webinar series called On Deck, Your Pastoral Succession Game Plan. It will take place on the 5 Tuesdays of September 2026 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Go to carlvaders.com/ondeck to sign up for our On Deck mailing list. As a subscriber, you'll get all the information as it's released, and you'll receive the lowest possible prices. Stick around through the rest of this interview, and I'll come back at the end to give you more information. Now, back to our conversation. I know of a church not far from where I live that 25 years ago, 20 to 25 years ago, had a real conversation among the congregation about embracing the changing ethnic face of their community. It had started as a predominantly white and upper income church because that was the neighborhood. The neighborhood had become lower income socioeconomically and much more ethnically mixed. And now it was a commuter church. Almost everybody in it was driving in from a distance. And the pastoral staff looked around and said, we've got to reach our community. And the congregation at the time basically rejected that idea. And they wanted to remain this very ethnically monochromatic church. And they have yet to recover to a place of health and strength from that decision 20 to 25 years ago. And most churches have not arrived at this point by such an obvious decision. It's all been because of our decisions, but most churches, I don't think, made a direct decision as that church that I'm aware of to say, no, we don't want them here.
No, I think most churches would say we open our doors to everyone. I really believe most churches think that.
Yeah, but the decisions we've made have put us in a place different from what we say we want, because the decisions are usually multiple and subtle, but they still end up being the same result as that one single definite decision that that church made. We've got to make that shift. We've got to understand the shifting demographics. And one of the things that the co-vocationality does in many situations is quite often that second vocation is more in the community, more connected to the community, so the pastor has a better sense of what's happening in the neighborhood around the church. That's acknowledging that some of that, sometimes that co-vocational is completely online, so that isn't necessarily the case, but that often is. Another option that you mentioned in the article as something we need to really consider, and it is also something that we've talked about a lot on this podcast, is the opportunity for interim pastors. Let's talk about that, because as pastors age out, this is one of the things, I was talking to somebody a while ago, and because they were aging out of their job, and they were in a job where people want younger and younger people. And in the pastorate, like you said, you know, typically we've gone for younger, but as long as you're competent, there's almost no aging out of pastoral ministry. If you're healthy and you're competent, there's something for you to do. And interim pastor is one of those things. Talk to us about those opportunities.
Yeah, I think this is the bridge. So you may say, okay, wow, Sam, you're painting a picture, like this is a tough road, but you painted a good picture of the neighborhood church and growing people from within and finding pastors in the local community. And yeah, that's great. That's 20 years from now. And I would say, yeah, because seminaries, let's just, the other side of this is seminaries are not graduating pastors. Whatever is going on there, whether it's the seminary's fault or the student's fault, is a bit of a moot point, other than to say, we're not graduating pastors out of seminaries. So the bridge, it's not like the seminaries are going to be part of the solution either, not at least any large degree. There's some individual seminaries that are doing a really good job, but there's just, even if you took every one of their graduates, it's just a drop in the bucket. Like it's not going to make much of a mark. Yeah. So the bridge to all of this, like what's the solution? The bridge is these interim pastors. It's that pastor that, well, I retired at 65, but I still got tons of energy. I still feel great. I'm going to go till I'm 75 or 78 or whatever it is. All right, good. We need 13 years out of you because there's no one else to take these roles. So I think what you're going to see is, and unfortunately for churches, there's going to be a lot of 10-year interims, and there's going to be a lot more mergers. You're going to start seeing churches of like 200 here and 200 there come and merge because we can't find a pastor. You're going to see what the Methodists know very well, which is circuit pastors.
Two, three, and 4 point pastors.
So we have people in our coaching group at Church Answers that shepherd three and four churches. They all have different service times, and they don't get on the horse anymore like the Methodists used to do, but they drive to these churches. So you are going to see long-term interim pastors, and we need more interim pastors, not less. Like, we need people to help transition these churches. You're going to see more mergers out of necessity, particularly due to deferred maintenance. And then you're going to see a return to the circuit days of like, I'm just, I shepherd three churches. They're all 40 people each, and they're in three different towns. And on Sunday, that's what I do. So I do think that there's going to be some interim measures that happen before we get to the solution. I think they're going to be necessary because we just don't have enough time at this point to catch up to the demographic reality of what's going on. But I think that these things can be good and they can work. And here's the thing, I'm not doom and gloom. Are we going to be where we need to be in 20 years? I think we can get there. I don't think the church is just going to collapse. I'm not going to be the person that prophesies and says, America is going to die as a church nation, and we're going to see all of these horrible things happen because of that. I don't think that. All that I'm trying to do with you today and your listeners is to paint reality. Like, here's a picture of reality. And yeah, there's going to have to be some painful interim measures, including interim pastors that, hey, I wish I could stay 6 months, but it's probably going to be 6 years. You're just going to see more of that until we can get people trained up.
Yeah, no question about it. And speaking of training people up, another piece that you offer, because we you don't just outline the challenges, you offer some, I think, very practical and realistic solutions. And one of them is building a new leadership pipeline. And you talk about if seminaries alone can't meet the growing need, then denominations, churches, and pastors have to take the initiative to raise up leaders from within. When I read that, it reminded me of my denomination here in Southern California. 20, 25 years ago, started a leadership school at their denominational headquarters. And the denominational headquarters is less than 6 miles from our seminary. And I thought, why are we opening up a competing school to our own seminary? This seems like a really bad idea, but somebody was smarter than me, and they recognized that we need both. The seminary isn't going to be the place that people primarily go anymore for practical hands-on, I want to become a pastor training. It's too expensive. It's not narrowly focused on that because it's got all these different majors and all, and it's all good stuff, but it's no longer the ideal setting for pastors to be trained. And at the time, 25 years ago, before online learning, if you were already in the marketplace, you didn't have the time to go to school full time. But the School of Ministry allowed for that to take place. So we had a certification program. And now I think it's something like 75% to 80% of our pastors coming up are coming through the certification program and not from our own seminary. So talk through why that's important and why that shift matters.
So we have a certification program at Church Answers, and through both Church Answers University and all of our certification programs, we've put 2,500 pastors through it. So over the last 5 to 6 years. So I do know this works, and I do know there's a huge market for it. And that's why we do what we do at Church Answers. That's why we have our certification programs. We have them for church consultants, interim pastors. We have one for expositional preaching. And then we have diploma that we offer through Church Answers University, and it can lead to an accredited degree with Redemption Seminary and Wesley Biblical Seminary. So we've already created this program. I believe it's only going to continue to expand. I think you're going to see more people do what we're doing. We're kind of on the front end of it at Church Answers, but I think you're going to see a lot more people doing similar things as us. The age of I need a degree, like a formalized accredited degree, and then I need a master's and I need a doctorate, that's dying with Gen Z. They're looking at the debt that their parents got into, the student debt that their parents got into, and they're saying, not for me. And their parents are telling them, you know what? I don't even know if I want you to go to college because it was a mistake for me to do that. And it was just too costly, too much debt. And I really didn't get what I needed out of it.
Yeah, not a lot of practical application for too many people.
And you could say the same for some seminaries as well. And I think you are going to see more certification programs like ours. And I welcome that. I think it'll be a good change. Always a place for a seminary. Go to a good seminary, get that rich theological training. There's some really, really good ones. Redemption Seminary, Wesley Biblical Seminary, Southern Seminaries, where I went to. You know, there's some good schools out there, of course. Not all of them are bad. But I think you're just going to see a bigger market for your certification programs.
Yeah, I'm seeing that everywhere I go, from just the general feeling and culture that has become anti-seminary, anti-university. I think that pendulum has swung too far over into that direction.
Probably.
I got a great education in the seminary that I went to. I used the information every single day. It was very practical, and it went deep enough for me to understand the value of research and of weighing things and thinking through logically. So it gave me a whole bunch of tools that are really helpful. But I've seen the frustration of people who have spent as much money, as much time, or more than I did, and who are coming out feeling like it really didn't work for them at all. So the practical is going to be much more. You also mentioned in the article that new staffing models are going to emerge, and you walk through some of them. So let me throw a couple of these at you to get your description of them. First of all, you talk about simultaneous pastoring, where multiple churches share competent leaders. So that's what we talked about. The United Methodist Friends are doing that and have been doing that for a long time, right?
Yeah, and in particular, the Global Methodist Church now. You're seeing Global Methodists, they're a new denomination, and they've got 6,200 churches. A lot of spots to fill, and you have pastors filling multiple spots there.
Yeah. And the co-vocational, as we talked about, allows for a church to have multiple pastors. This happens to me regularly. I'll be teaching at a conference. I'm introduced as the small church guy. Somebody Googles, finds the church that I'm serving at, goes to the staff page and sees this long list of young pastors on staff. And I've, in the Q&A, quite often the first question is, I just went to your church website. You're not a small church. You got this many number of people on staff. I've got to explain, not one of them, including the lead pastor, is full-time. Every one of them is co-vocational. And this idea of co-vocationality opens it up for people who want to do something creative. Maybe they're working a regular job that it brings in the income and they're okay with it and they're fine with it, but they want to be creative within their faith community in a way that really adds value to the church. And if we can give them a gas card a couple times a week to fill up their car, they're happy to see that as a thank you. That becomes their co-vocation. And you can have more people on staff because your money goes farther when you're not requiring a full-time pastor for every single position.
100% agree. I mean, the more I'm at West Bradenton, I've been here 10 years, the greater the percentage of co-vocational staff we have. We have full-time and part-time. You know, full-time and co-vocational. Don't have a problem with that at all. There's plenty of good in a full-time position. And yep. We all know that you work the hours, so you might as well get the pay. You know, there are plenty of people out there who'd be like, yeah, co-vocational is great, but you know, I'm putting in 40, 50 hours at my church and I'm definitely not getting paid for that. There is some limits to the model and some downsides to the model too.
Yes.
I want to
yes.
be very, very clear about that. Regardless, because the median church size is now 65 people, the money's just not there. I mean, it all goes to the facility for a lot of these churches. Then they're not even keeping up with deferred maintenance. So whether we like it or not, that's just the reality of where most American churches are.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I want to spend a few minutes with you in the bonus material. At the end of the article, you talk about three proactive steps that we can take. And I want to do it under the heading of how to prepare your church for your pastoral retirement. So if you are interested in looking at this and you're looking towards stepping away from the pastorate, and in addition to where you're going to go and what you're going to do, you're concerned about the church that you're leaving, because maybe there is no leadership pipeline and you're recognizing the challenge of finding new leaders. How do you prepare your church for your departure? We're going to talk about that in the bonus material. So if you want to get the bonus material on that, very practical help for you if you're considering that, you can get it in two ways. First of all, if you become a financial partner, go to carlvaders.com/support. If you become a financial partner, you'll get all of my books for free. And in addition to that, you'll get the weekly newsletter that includes the content for all of the bonus conversations we have with all of our podcast guests. If you just want the bonus content and nothing else, you can get that for free by going to carlvaders.com/subscribe. You'll get our free weekly newsletter with all of the bonus content links in that, including the bonus content with Sam about how to prepare your church for your pastoral retirement. So if you're in the position where you're considering that and you don't know how to get the church ready for that, because I think that's good stewardship to get your church ready to do that before you leave. Here's another shift that I've noticed, and I'm assuming you've seen it too, but maybe not. So I'll throw it at you. When I was younger in ministry, we're talking 30 to 40 years ago, in my tribe of Christianity in the United States, every church and every pastor is independent. And when a pastor left, they were not called by a bishop. They simply decided the Lord has led me somewhere else. And the model was almost singular. Once you decided you were going to leave, you announced it to the congregation. Within a month, you were out the door and you were on somewhere else, and you let the church make the decision completely on their own about who the next pastor was going to be. And if you somehow tried to help them find another pastor, you were considered to be meddling.
Yes. Oh, I'm very familiar with that model. That's the one I know.
Yeah, exactly. Now that model has shifted, because when I left as lead pastor of my church, we were very proactive in finding the next person, in presenting to the congregation, here's the shift we're making, here's why we're making that shift. We want to have open conversations. Let's sit down and talk this through, so that it wasn't just simply randomly picked. There are advantages and disadvantages to both, but I think there are overwhelming advantages to the idea that as you're leaving a church, you are stewarding the church into their next phase and season of life by helping them make the wise decision for who's going to come in next. There are some real positives happening in that right now, aren't there?
I think so, yeah. You can make this argument either way as to what's meddling and what's leading.
Yeah.
It really, it just depends. Like, is it meddling or is it leading? Well, that depends on how you set it all up from the start.
Yeah.
If you're not intentional about the process and after you've already made decisions, you're probably meddling. But if you are intentional on the front end and create a process for your church, then you're leading them. So I would just say what makes the difference here is what you do on the front end.
Got it. Okay. So in the bonus material, we'll talk about three steps to help you prepare your church for retirement so you can be a good steward of that handoff. But before we do that, let's close out this audio podcast with the lightning round questions. I'm going to give you these four questions that every guest has to go through. All right, Sam?
Let's do it.
Question number one, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
Technology. It used to be that every pastor needed an administrative assistant, and now you've got programs that can do your calendar. You've got systems that can handle things, even potentially AI, although I'm very cautious with AI as to, generating content, but there's some help there as well. I think that technology is probably the biggest change in my tenure. We're talking the last 20 years for me. I get a lot more texts now than I do phone calls, and that was not the case 20 years ago.
Yeah, there's a comedian out there who says, my phone is just a seldom used app on my phone.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Number two, what free resource like an app or a website has helped you lately that you would recommend for small church ministry?
All right, let's stick with this kind of theme of technology. And I will say Calendly, which is how I schedule with you, Carl. I use the same technology. It is brilliant. I won't get to all the details about that. You can go discover it for yourself, but it will save you hours and hours and hours and hours of time a month.
Yeah. When I first was introduced to it was when somebody sent me a Calendly link and I went, oh, that's cool. I get to pick the time when I meet with them. So it gives both sides a sense of freedom and control on the situation. That's really, really helpful. Yeah. Question number three, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
I'll give a couple here. I'll give the worst and the best. And the worst will lead to good advice. We'll start with the worst. Just preach the word was like the worst advice I've ever gotten, because there's so much more to pastoring than just preaching.
Yeah.
And to reduce pastoring to preaching is ridiculous. So that really is, I mean, if you've ever said that, please stop. It's just ridiculous advice.
Yeah, you remove the word just from it. Preach the word, yes, but not just.
Correct. Yeah, the idea is you can, the concept there is you can lead your church from the pulpit. You cannot lead your church from the pulpit. Like you should preach to your church from the pulpit. And that's extraordinarily important. One of the most important things you do. But just to preach the word, to think that you can lead just by preaching is asinine.
Well, that's why this podcast is called The Church Lobby.
Ah, okay.
Because so much of our leadership, especially in a smaller church, needs to take place in the church lobby.
Yeah, and then the other thing that really sticks with me, and this was something that a deacon said to me many, many, many years ago. I was trying to convince people that my way was the right way. Of course, I had all of my argumentation lined up and it was perfectly appropriate. And I could, argue my way into any setting where people would just have to like submit to my argument because it was that good. So he pulled me aside and he said, "Sam, this is all good stuff." And he was very complimentary. He said, "It's good stuff, but don't use your intellect as a weapon." And I was like, "Ah, yes, I was using the fact that I'm really like on a scale, like IQ level, I'm average." But I walked into that room and I knew more because it was my area of expertise as a pastor. The church is my area of expertise. I was weaponizing that knowledge. That was my problem there. It wasn't that I had a good or a bad idea. It was that I was weaponizing knowledge. And that's something that has stuck with me for many, many, many years. And now even though I talk a lot because I do podcasting and I talk a lot on this episode, I try to listen more now.
I think that is particularly applicable online. It has amplified the weaponization of our intelligence. So it's not even, is the person right or is the person smart? That's not even the issue in most circumstances. It's how are they using it, how are, and they're weaponizing it. Very much so. That's great. And then the final one is this: what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Well, just recently, I mean, you want to talk the last couple of weeks? So
Up to
I
you.
live in Florida. Man, I live in Florida. I see weird all the time. But one of my favorites was when someone brought their, I can't say it without laughing, someone brought their parrot, their pet parrot to church. And it talked. It was like a big macaw. And it was sitting on somebody's
Whoa.
shoulder and it talked back to me. The whole service. So I'm getting text messages. I don't have my phone on me when I preach, obviously. I don't have it even when I'm in the church because I try to focus on people around me. But I came back to my office after services were done. Like, what was that? There is a parrot in our church and it is squawking and talking
Wow.
through the whole thing. So that's I could share, like you, I could share countless stories, but that's one that is more recent.
Yeah, that's wow. Yeah, I've heard of dogs barking, I've heard fingernail clipping, but a parrot, that's a new one. Yeah, absolutely. If people do want to reach out and get any more of the information that you offer, the stuff that you got going on at Church Answers, what's the best way for people to reach out?
Two places, churchanswers.com and samrainer.com.
All righty. We'll put both of those in the show notes. And we're going to go into the bonus material for our partners and for our subscribers to the newsletter about how to prepare your church for pastoral retirement. Just about 5 minutes or so on that. But real practical advice if you are looking at stepping down from your church and you want to help your church prepare for that next season, follow us over to my YouTube channel for that. The link will be in the show notes for this. Sam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Carl.
When I was starting out in pastoral ministry, one of the most well-known megachurch pastors of the time would often say that one of the mistakes many churches make when they're starting out is that they build too soon and too small. Today, my guess is that that pastor would amend that a bit by saying, yes, it's still a problem to build too soon. We need to keep flexible as long as possible. But building too big is now a more significant problem than building too small. We are now entering a stage of church life that I think will last at least a generation or more, in which all of our previously assumed standards for traditional church ministry can no longer be assumed. From denominational affiliations to standalone buildings to pastoral training and full-time pastoral ministry, everything but the foundational truths of the gospel are now up for grabs. And while this is not an easy thing, I'm convinced that it's actually a very good thing. We've called it a crisis, and it is in the immediate, but in the long term, it won't be a crisis. It will be a blessing. We need to constantly question the validity and effectiveness of our programs, our institutions, our habits, and our traditions. We need to constantly measure them alongside the truth of Scripture, especially the commandment to love God and serve people, and the commission to reach lost people. What worked in the 20th century won't work as we move further into the 21st century. But the gospel, that works in all places and at all times. Cling to it, question everything else. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby. As I mentioned earlier, pastoral succession is something every church will face, but that we do almost no preparation for. On Deck, Your Pastoral Succession Game Plan is our brand new webinar series coming on 5 Tuesdays in September 2026 at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Pacific Time. The full webinar price will be $299 per church and pastor. But as a subscriber, you'll get up to half off that price when registration begins soon. Just go to carlvaders.com/ondeck to get on our mailing list. You'll also receive a couple short surveys this summer so you can tell us what kind of pastoral succession information you're looking for so we can meet as many of your needs as possible. Links for all of this will be in the show notes.